Welcome to the Homebodies Podcast. Do as Charlie does.
Maybe not Sky. Anyways. Okay, so something that's really exciting that happened recently is I learned more about myself by taking like personality tests. So one of our roommates made us all take the, what is it called? Enneagram? Have you heard of them?
No, until you mentioned it not too long ago. So I took it as well.
Yeah, woohoo! Okay. I think it'll be fun to learn more about ourselves and each other by, you know, reading through our results.
Interesting. Dun-dun-dun.
For those who doesn't know what, like, Enneagrams are, it's basically a personality test that people take. And then it breaks down people's personality into like 9 categories. I'm not sure what all of them are. All I know is I'm a 2.
All right. So yeah, that's interesting because I've heard of the ones that are like the one with the letters, with the IP something something. I already forgot what I was, but that's the only one I've taken. And I'm curious to see what type 2 is.
Okay, let's see. So, from my results, type 2 is the helper. Wow, so helpful. Wow. Okay, type 2 people focuses on people and relationships and offer their help to others in order to feel loved and appreciated. Okay, how I scored for all other types. So, I'm a 93% match for type 2. But I'm also a 90% match for type 9. But 9 ease themselves into the flow of life by keeping a low profile, prioritizing harmony, and letting others go first. So one of our best friends, she is a 9.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, we kind of have... Because, I mean, for you, the type 2, I kind of see it because you're... a lot more reserved, but you're also like looking out for us, making sure everybody's like integrated, and if anybody needs help, you're there for them. Is there any more info about type 2?
Okay, let's see. In depth, 2s are generous, supportive, and caring. They have the drive to make the people around them feel loved and comfortable. It's why they're called helpers and givers.
Wow, I'm a giver.
2s readily offer whatever they have, their time, their attention, or simply a bowl of hot soup, goat soup. They love to feel involved in the lives and needs of the people around them. It's often hard for 2s to respect their own boundaries and openly ask for the things they need. Twos tend to pretend that they don't have any need of their own until they become resentful as a result of feeling like no one cares for them.
Ooh. Watch out. I'll make sure not to make you resent anything I do.
Okay, and let's see. Some strength include generous with my love, time, and resource. Have lots of empathy, especially for the lonely and something. That doesn't matter. are great at sensing what other people need and finding out how to fulfill their needs. Are attractive to most anyone with their open and charming attitude. Ah! I'm attractive!
Oh, wow.
Build warm and welcoming homes for themselves and others. Wow.
So how do you feel about this description? Does it like kind of go with who you are?
I think so. I have another website that we can read. Like, I will read about us as well.
Mm-hmm.
That talks more about the different like personality traits that we have, because these are just strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I care for others sometimes more than how I care for Marshall. You know, that's okay.
Does it show any weaknesses?
Okay, let's see.
Or maybe your relationship. Any tips?
Oh, wow. What is type 2? It says there are hardworking and motivated people with a driver to connect with the world. They love attending to other people and feeling helpful. Here we have basic desire. The most basic desire of type 2 is to be fully loved and accepted. I just want to be loved. They often express this by extremely attentive to the needs of others around them and helping other people in any way they can. People who identify as a type 2 may repress their own negative emotions or channel them into more positive or typical acceptable emotions in order to be perceived as more desirable. Wow, that's... I feel like that's...
A little hiding behind a mask type deal.
That's a little hidden close to home now we're getting. My basic fear is of being unwanted or unloved by those around them. I'm afraid to be unloved. may believe consciously or subconsciously that love is the only gained and earned by serving others. Type 2 personalities tend to easily perceive and understand the needs of others, seek acceptance and love from people, attend to the need of those around them, repress their own negative emotions, very, very accurate, fear being unwanted or disliked. Here are some weaknesses. I feel like this is just repeating itself though, because it's like seeking approval from others, being perceived as overbearing. I'm overbearing at times. Difficult recognizing and acknowledging their own needs. Disliking or being easily offended by criticism.
Don't criticize our podcast, guys. It really like puts guy down. Just put positive ones, okay?
yes, do that.
I wonder how many of our listeners are like going with, oh, I'm kind of like this type too. I think in our description, we're going to put like the a link to this test so you guys can take it and like tell us on Instagram or something and see how your score goes. Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Oh, here's relationships. Oh, professional relationships. Are there non-professional? Romantic relationships. Type 2 can be healthy, attentive, caring partners when with someone who remind them to take time for themselves. When in a relationship with someone who is less focused on others, they should be careful to communicate their needs for appreciation and acts of service. So I need someone who communicates and recognizes that I give them so much that they need to give something back to me. Not like, you know, stuff, but love. Wow. In romantic relationships, type 2 may have trouble accepting constructive criticism from their partner, recognizing and directly expressing their needs, acknowledging boundaries, and giving personal space. I don't give personal space. I think I give too much personal space. Oh, wow. The criticism is coming up.
Watch out.
The not able to take criticism is already coming out.
We're learning so much from Sky.
Oh, no. Oh, there's famous examples for type 2s. Let's see. Dolly Parton is type 2. Mother Teresa. Wow.
Wow. You're like Mother Teresa. Teresa.
Stevie Wonder. Who else? Who's another person I know in this list? There's more information that we can dive into later. But this is, I think, a pretty good summary of type 2. And like, I think it links pretty well into our episode, which is trauma. We have some trauma.
I wonder if trauma has something to do with the type of person you will be.
I think so. It has to, right? Yeah. So I do think what I want to talk about later in the episode does link back to this. But, you know, I want to hear about your personality trait.
All right. So I did take the test literally minutes before we start recording. And it says your most likely personality test is type 7. The Enthusiast.
Wow.
Okay, for sevens, the world is primarily a place to be enjoyed. They build their lives around the exciting, the stimulating, and the entertaining with a 94 match.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then it says, like, I scored for each of the nine types, and they kind of reflect on my human experience. And the second most match that I got with a 78% was type nine, which is nines. They ease themselves into the flow of life by keeping a low profile, prioritizing harmony and letting others go first.
Interesting how like between the three people friend group, we all have nines somewhere, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
We are really a harmonized group. Anyways.
I think so too. And then I have a 61 match with a type eight, which is eights for those who are interested. They are, they like to attempt to master the world by being strong. They like to solve problems through sheer willpower and have no problem with confrontation. Okay. And then 56, I am a type two.
Oh, I see.
Which are people, like how you mentioned, people who focus on relationship and other people and offer their help to others in order to feel loved and appreciated.
Wow.
Okay, so let's hear a little bit more about sevens. So sevens are extroverted, energetic, and enthusiastic about life's possibilities. For sevens, the world is primarily a place of adventure. They live for the excitement of the future. They are fun, loving, entertaining, and like to spin every defeat into a success. Sevens are good with inviting others to enjoy what life has to offer. They struggle to acknowledge the painful parts of their life.
Oof, hitting a little hard, huh?
A little bit. So my strengths as a seven, they have a gift to brighten up the mood wherever they go, are good at seeing the big picture of things. They don't take themselves too seriously. Are great at making plans that are fun for everyone. That's a no-no. I hate making plans. And have an agile mind that is able to switch between multiple things quickly. Okay. So sevens are cheerful and pragmatic people who spend a lot of their time focusing on the next amazing experience. They are spontaneous and bold and don't quickly accept limitations to their curiosity. Among the amazing gifts of seven is their belief in the positive sides of people and their ideas. They like to encourage others to try out new things and pursue their dreams, just like they do to themselves. But their desire for constant stimulation can often lead them into overindulgence. Eye roll. Their inability to face up the less positive sides of life also makes it hard for them to commit when things get hard and to own up for their mistakes, instead of spinning them into something entertaining. Sevens, this is like the motivations. Seven wants to feel satisfied and content. They try to achieve a place of continued happiness by focusing only on the bright side of life. Sevens belong to the head group of the Enneagram, as do type 5s and 6. These types share a special relationship to their mind and to their feelings of fear and anxiety. While 5s withdraw into their minds to observe the world from a distance, 6s use their minds to scan and prepare for any potential danger in order to calm their anxieties. 7s, who from the outside look very pragmatic, try to distract their minds from the lingering feeling of the darker things hidden underneath their sunny exterior.
Oh my god. Oh, I see. I see how it is, Charlie.
I feel too exposed. Many sevens report that there was a certain lack of nurture in their childhood. Oh, God.
Oh, no. We are linking things back to the episode. This is why we had to take this before.
The feeling that no one else would ultimately take care of them made them develop the strategy of keeping themselves happy and entertained. Without the basic security of knowing they are provided for, they choose anything that comes their way to provide them with happiness and contentment. Even if it's only fleeting. Okay, let's calm down, okay? Let's, like, put a little bit of breaks. Okay, it says, what's often holding Enneagrams I'm going to continue reading because this is too interesting.
Okay.
What's like holding me back as a seven? Sevens, unconsciously, believe that feelings of frustration, fear, and pain will quickly overwhelm you if you don't stay on top of them. They therefore try to occupy their mind with interesting distractions at all times. Sevens are convinced that they can escape from those frightening feelings forever as long as they only choose positive emotion. Not very healthy, I have to say. The main struggle of sevens is looking for happiness outside themselves. This puts them in danger of becoming insatiable, since nothing they do, no matter how exciting and fulfilling it is, in their mind, actually keeps them satisfied for long. Sevens who become healthy are some of the most inspiring people on the planet. They infect people with their optimism while possessing the strength to see their great vision through to the end and enjoy the fruits of their labor. Because healthy sevens become comfortable with the full range of human emotion, they are fun and grounded, idealistic and practical, content and resilient at the same time. Seven starts to grow when they realize that joy is a gift that can't be obtained by force, but only received. The realization lies at the other side of a process of facing their pain. I need to do that. Doing this, sevens will realize that they can come out on the other side intact, and this way accept that suffering and disappointment are parts of life that don't have to be avoided, but can be used to grow. And so, famous type sevens are Robin Williams, mm-hmm. Katy Perry, wow. John F. Kennedy,
okay.
Cameron Diaz, Jim Carrey, Mozart, and Richard Branson. I don't know who that is. So, it didn't say anything about my relationship, so I'm going to see if I can see anything like that.
Okay, now I had to go to a different website for relationships. So let me just read it off to you and you can tell me if this is accurate.
Okay.
Okay, so romantic relationship. Type 7 can be enthusiastic, fun partners, especially to those who are typically more reserved and practical. When in a relationship with another 7, it's important that they work together to carefully consider the consequences of their actions before making rash decisions. Who moved to Peru from the U.S. on a whim?
Maybe me. I don't know.
So some strength in romantic relationships you have. Unfiltered enthusiasm and optimism. Easily adapting to new unforeseen circumstances. Frequently encouraging their partners to try new things. I think that's true.
Yeah.
You might have trouble with committing to one person or settling down.
Damn.
Facing negative emotions or conversations. Listening attentively to their partner.
I feel like I'm a good listener.
Mm-hmm. I think you are a good listener, but the other two are pretty funny, I think.
Oh, yeah, but they're pretty accurate.
Yeah, those are our personality. Did you learn something about yourself? You feel like getting called out by the test?
I feel like I already knew all this. I just didn't, like it says, seven don't like to face those emotions. So I kind of like, it was in the back of my mind, like really hitting in the trunk. So not really thought about it until now.
Oh, wow. Yep. Yeah. Okay, so a part of the test results that did not read. I'm going to read now for as a good transition into our next topic, which is our traumas from before. So it says for two, as children, twos pick up the message that expressing their need isn't okay. So they try getting their need met by asking for them indirectly through the things they do for others. They are often very eager to help their parents and willing to take on extra projects at school. With their highly sensitive social antennas, they tend to have many friends. That's not true. But they tend to give up their own wants and desires to please those that they want to be close to. So, I think this is a good transition for me because for you guys who doesn't know, I grew up with like a single mom background type of thing. And so I felt like as a kid, I had to learn very fast that, you know, it's very hard for my mom to do all of this on her own. So my needs, not necessary. What are needs? Who have needs? You don't, there's no needs. So I usually try to deal with everything myself because I know everything that's already on my mom. And so I try and help her as much as possible as a kid even. And I think that just, you know, lingered into adulthood.
Do you have any siblings?
I do not have any siblings. So there's no one to help. Besides, that's me, myself, and I. So yeah, I think this does explain some of like the childhood, explain some of the childhood stuff.
Yeah, I can definitely see that because, I mean, we know, we've known each other since, what, 8th grade? 9th grade?
Uh-huh.
9th grade, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so, like, going to your house as a teenager and seeing how the opinion of your mother, like, really goes with your decisions, even now, I think it, I can see it through what you just read about types two and the needing to not really state what you want because you're thinking of your mom and trying to help her because she is in a situation where she had to go through hardships. But then again, this has made you go through your own hardships and like not wanting to ask for help. That's another thing. So it's interesting, no?
Yeah, I think so too. Because, you know, like you said, especially now, right, we've gotten better. We don't have that quote-unquote hardship anymore. You know, our life in the USSR are not bad. They're not like, I mean, not millionaires or anything, but they're not bad. We're not like scraping by the bottom of society or something. But things like that from when you're a kid does linger on. They don't just go away. So even now, I still always have extra food in my house. Just because when I was growing up younger with my single mom, without the help with grandparents or like our aunts or something, we were always afraid to not know when our next meal is. So let's say my aunt buys me a snack of some sort, which I don't get often as a kid, I would make that like bag of chips or something last as long as possible because I don't know when the next time I'm gonna get chips are.
Yes, and I remember when we were roommates, I will go into your room and you will just have like stacks of goodies and I will buy like the same amount and mine will be gone in 3 days and hers will be there for weeks. I don't know how you did it.
That's the thing. That's like, even till now, that's how I always buy snacks, even till this day. I have a drawer in my little dresser thing dedicated to snacks. When I was a kid, like all that happening, I'm not sure when the next time I'm going to get something as simple as, you know, candy or cookies are the next time. I'll always save half for next time. That's just how things roll. What about your like results? Did it bring up any childhood stuff? I feel like there was one sentence you read that we both thought of the same thing about your childhood.
Let me find it, to be honest. I don't remember. I have really bad memory. Okay, it says, the line was, many sevens report that there was a certain lack of nurture in their childhood. The feeling that no one else would ultimately take care of them made them develop the strategy of keeping themselves happy and entertained. Yes. So a little bit about me. I'm from Honduras and my mom married my dad at a very early age, at 16. And I was given birth at the age, my mom was 18, going to 19, the same as my dad. So they were really young, okay? So in Honduras, I don't know if you know where it is. It's like right after, well, it's United States, Mexico, Guatemala, and then Honduras. It's like a very small tropical country. And so because they weren't living in poverty, but they were poor. They were living with my grandma. And so to earn more money, my dad decided to travel to the Cayman Islands. And so, well, things didn't go well. My mom divorced at the age of 3. My dad no longer lived with us. And my mom decided to go to the United States to be able to support me financially. And so that led me to live the next 13 years of my life with different relatives. So every 6 months, I would travel from home to home because I was like a foster child, to be honest. And so I didn't have that security of this is my family, this is my place, this is where I belong. So now the thing, I'm in Peru because I am not attached to America or attached to the home I was. I'm not even attached to Peru nor attached to where I live because I was never attached to a place because of my childhood. So when they say the lack of nurture, and that kind of relates to like I have attachment issues where, let's say, and I can say this because, you know, this is just how I am. If Sky or if my other friend or if my partner leaves me, I'll be sad, but I will like get over it really quickly because even though I do love them and I want to be with them forever, I on the other side I don't expect it to last forever for the entirety of my life, so. It really irks me that it like mentioned that because I don't like to dwell on that. Like you won't see me, you know, in my room like, oh my God, I have nobody. Like, oh, poor me, my childhood. Oh, you know, I don't. Like what I do is I focus on my friends, on the people I'm with. I sing. I created this podcast with Sky. So I don't dwell too much on those emotions. But they do, it's like when you open a trunk and you stuffed everything in there and you like sit on it so you can like close it really well and then you put a lock on it and then you just throw it away. That's how I am. And so at least that's like the trauma that I have. And so it's interesting and I don't like to talk about it that much, but here we are because of the episode. So we're making some sacrifices.
Yeah, you see, we exposed me in that dating app episode. So we have to expose you just a little bit.
Too much.
I'm making the same contributions here. But yeah, when you read that line, I was like, wow, that is a little too accurate. Like, did they write this based on your life?
I think that there's been some universal connection there.
But yeah, whenever you tell me that, I always thought, you know, it must be really tough, like, growing up like that. And I'm always so, not surprised, that's not the right word, but, like, so glad, I guess, to see how you were able to cope with that and just finding different ways to keep yourself happy and entertained and still have such a positive outlook on everything. So, yeah, I feel like, oh, our dear host, Charlie. She's great.
And I feel like a lot of people don't have like great childhoods. And I feel like the thing is that it's not just, you know, our parents. It's our parents' parents. And it's like a generational thing. And I feel like some of the stories that we're going to read kind of deal with that, of that like generational trauma that kind of goes back and forth. And I'm really curious at what we'll read today, especially for Am I the Asshole stories that we have.
Let's see what stories we have in the back today. So for me, mine is called Am I the Asshole for Telling My Girlfriend That Her Past Trauma/Abuse Can't Be an Excuse for Everything. So I have not read this, so bear with me if I if I become dyslexic or something. Okay. I, 25 male, have been with my girlfriend Jane, 25 female, for a year and a half and lived together. Jane's previous relationship was an abusive one. I am still learning as she continues opening up to me. When discussing moving in together, Jane said there were certain things she felt uncomfortable doing. She said she had negative association with certain tasks and that she wasn't able to do them. I was empathetic and told her I'd do anything she wasn't able to. She told me it was small niche things and I definitely should have clarified what that meant. At first it was fine, but slowly the list of things Jane couldn't do grew. Jane didn't feel comfortable vacuuming, anything kitchen or bathroom related, and laundry related. Her task consisted of weekly dusting and taking out the garbage and recycling. I would sometimes make small encouragements, like asking if she'd like to help me make dinner or just keep me company while I cooked, folded the laundry together, made the bed together, etc. But she would always refuse and would call me unsupportive of her self-recovery journey. Last month, my mom called the home phone and Jane picked up. While they talked, Jane invited my parents over for dinner. She told me about it once I got home, but it was scheduled on a Tuesday, which is the one day a week I work longer hours. Jane told me she didn't want to cancel and that she wanted to make a good impression, and it would be good for our relationship. I agreed, but told her I'll be home by 7:30 and she have to do the majority of the work as I wouldn't be home in time. She agreed and said it'll be good for her. I grocery shopped the recipe she had planned and made sure she had everything she needed. Day off. I get home and nothing is done. The house isn't too messy, but there is laundry on the sofa and was moved from the table. The dishwasher was clean and there was dirty dishes in the sink. And dinner wasn't started. Jing began rattling off a list of everything that needs to be done, stating she set the table and I needed to finish it off. When I asked what she's done all day, she told me I knew about her limitations that I shouldn't have expected her to do that. I told her that she knew she had to do majority and agreed to it, but she told me she was having a bad week and to not put pressure on her. I told her if she was having a bad week, she could cancel on my parents and not put all the pressure on me picking up after her slack. She began crying and telling me I was reminding her of her ex and said that I wanted to control her. I told her that wasn't what I was saying and told her what she's done was both inconsiderate of me and my parents and that her trauma couldn't be an excuse for everything and she needed to take accountability for her actions. After I said that, she was inconsolable and locked herself in the bathroom all night. In the moment, I believe what I said, but now I'm not sure. Am I the asshole?
Definitely not the asshole. To be honest, he was the sweetest guy to this lady because he tried to be understanding. He wanted to help her. He wanted to, like, ease this thing. But the thing is, like, I feel like she took advantage of that and be like, oh, I can use my trauma to my advantage and, like, not do all of this. Because what does trauma has to do with you dusting and doing laundry? Nothing. That's just self basic human needs being met. I don't know.
Yeah, like, what was she doing in between the period of her, like, ex-boyfriend and her current boyfriend? Did she just wear her clothes once and throw them away and buy new ones?
Exactly.
Like, she had to do something in the middle, right? Did she just bring it home to her parents to do them? And I feel like when he said, you know, at least be in the kitchen and keep me company when I cook, that's such, like, a small request, and I don't understand why she couldn't even do that.
Yeah, she was definitely being manipulative. And I wonder, and I'm not saying this, but Sometimes people exaggerate their abuse to control other people, if it even happened, you know. I'm not saying she nothing ever happened, but I wonder if she was also part of the problem, you know, in her past relationship. And I feel like, I'm not saying you should tag people with red flags if they have some sort of trauma, but like before you even start a relationship with them, really like think about the things that you're going to deal with, right? Because, I mean, if she says that her trauma is I cannot clean, I cannot do anything for some reason, the thing will be either to him to be a like a stay-at-home type of dude and do all the cleaning and dining. But if he has to work, then they have to think about maybe bringing in like a housemaid, right, to help ease with that. But if they're not at that stage, then really need to reconsider if this is going to work out, right? Because is she even trying to go on therapy, like, you know, to kind of deal with these things?
So there's an added saying, Jing is in therapy. So she's in therapy. But still, like, I get, let's say she was abused, and I do feel, you know, I do feel for those people who was in those abusive relationships, and I do commend them for being able to get out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know this is really harsh to say, but there is a point when you, I don't know how to put this better, but to get over it. It can be in baby steps, right? It doesn't have to be, oh, I'm 100% fine all of a sudden. And I feel like for her, if she knows there's things she needs to work on, that she's still feeling the trauma from her past relationship, she should, like, tell this dude, this new boyfriend, that, hey, you know, I think we should take it a little slower then. Let me work on myself a little more so we don't have all these issues again before they're moving in together or, like, making dinner plans with the parents even. Because I feel like on my side, if I was that person, I want to recognize I got out of a really bad relationship and I need some time for myself to heal before I can be in another one with someone else and not be a burden to that person.
Yes, you can have some trauma, but if you haven't worked on yourself, how can you put that on others? You know, I feel like that's where the self-betterment comes into place, right? Because if you know, I'm not ready for that person, like, am I willing to give, you know, this burden I'm carrying to that other person as well? Or can I handle it on my own and be independent? Because in a relationship, yes, you help each other, but you have to have your own independence as a person. You cannot ask the other person to be your therapist, just like you cannot be the therapist of anybody. So having that, like, independence is really essential to begin, I feel like.
Yeah, I do agree. So I don't think the guy is the asshole here. I mean, it does sound like you mentioned that he's been pretty understanding. He's trying to help her, trying to just get her out of her trauma a little bit, but she's not budging. And I feel like it's something that she needs to work on. And hopefully her being in therapy will help that. And
to be honest, how he mentioned that, like, it would have been fine. Let's say she did have an episode of, I can't do any of this because it reminds me of my trauma. Then she does need to communicate. Hey, sweetie, I cannot do this right now. I'm unable to do anything. Is it okay if we reschedule or if we go to a restaurant instead so I don't have to deal with this right now? I think that'll change the whole story, right? We wouldn't have this in my the asshole moment.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true. Like, just say, hey, let's eat out instead of eat in this time with your parents. We'll do it next time. I mean, that's not canceling and it's lessening the work on them. That's a great point, I think.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Yeah. Because for at least in my situation, like how everybody has their own issues, right? And then like my partner has his own issues, in the sense that he was cheated on before I was part of the relationship. And so I had to learn how to cope with that, because I am not in that position. But let's say you have been cheated on, and you cannot, like, you have trust issues because of that. You don't know if that other person that comes along will do the same to you. And so for the beginning of my relationship, I had to deal with that, where he would need to know where what I was doing, what my phone, you know, what I had on my phone. But knowing that his, because of his past, he was like this, I would, you know, have, he would know my phone code, because, I mean, I didn't have anything to hide. And sometimes we will get into arguments because he thought that something was happening. But through communication and through like talking it out, he has dropped those tendencies of like not trusting me. Sometimes it like comes up here and there, because, you know, when it's so ingrained into you, it kind of flashes out. But I feel like with my understanding of how he feels and like his understanding of my point of view, things can get along better between both of us. So yeah, it's just all about communication and like telling the other person what bothers you, what it's okay, setting your boundaries, you know. And like the thing is, what happens when you're a child and you don't know what boundaries even means, especially with your parents. So with our next story, we're going to talk about kind of a situation where the parents are the ones that are like bringing up the trauma, not your past relationship. So,
okay.
So my Am I the Asshole story, it says, am I the asshole for snapping at my daughter's therapist when she tried to blame my daughter's trauma on me? I, 43 female, have a 22-year-old daughter. All my daughter's life, she struggled with mental health issues. She has ADHD, bipolar, and borderline personality disorder. If I'm being honest, I never really understood a lot of my daughter's disorders. I've always approached mental illness as something you just bury deep down. And as a single mother, I've tried to do my best, but I know I'm not perfect. Well, recently my daughter asked if I go to one of her therapy sessions with her. I only agreed because she seemed super excited about it. When we got there, her therapist first asked me how I was raised to think about mental health. I said I wasn't raised to think about mental health at all. She then said that she guessed that. It seemed kind of snarky, but I'd ignored it. She then asked about my family's history with addiction and mental issues. I denied any of them, and then she started to list all the things my daughter told her and asked if they were a lie. They weren't a lie, but I never saw any of these things as big issues. She then began to explain to me that PBD is a trauma response, borderline personality disorder. She explained it can be caused by many things, but by me invalidating her emotions so much, like I was invalidating my own, had a part to play in it. She then tried to tell me ways I can cope with my own trauma that can help my daughter through hers. After listening to her spew absolute garbage for 30 minutes, I finally got up and told her she was a fucking quack and didn't know anything she was talking about. I stormed out and left. My daughter called me crying an hour later, and I told her she needed to get an actual therapist instead of that bitch. I wasn't upset with my daughter, but I did feel like she kind of threw me to the wolves. After cooling down through, I think maybe I could have handled that wrong, but I'm not sure. Am I the asshole?
I think I could have handled that wrong, but I'm not sure. well, I think the older generation, right, it's a little different too with growing up thinking about mental disorders, like not like mental health in general, not just disorders. I feel like I can relate to this a little as well because, what did she say? Like in the beginning, it was mentioned that she thought the mental health was just bearing everything down. And that is a very old way of thinking. And I feel like with our new generation coming, we are more in tune with our emotions. And I feel like that's a great thing. And I still believe in the fact that everyone needs therapy, including myself. And like we just talk about, we have these traumas. But the thing is how she reacted just really gets me. I know it's really bad, but I think it's hilarious because it feels like she's getting called out and she's kind of realizing that, but she still doesn't want to deal with it. She knows what the therapist said was on point, but she's like, no, I don't, at this point, I'm still not going to deal with it. So you're a bitch. That's what I feel like how she was reacting to it. So I don't know. I don't know how to even help these kind of people.
Yeah, it's kind of like the people that says, oh, yeah, I had trauma, but I turned out fine, right? That you hear a lot. And I feel like that's like a self-security mechanism where you pretend everything is fine where it's not. Kind of like how I deal with things a lot of times where, like, I don't like to dwell on things that hurt me in the past, but that keeps bottling up. And I think because the therapist was like bringing this up, she like exploded, not because of what she was saying, but because of all that repression that she had it in her. And like the thing with that this is not just her mom what sucked and so her daughter had all this trauma, it's because her mother had this trauma as well. But nobody ever like helped her open up about it. And this like generational trauma that has to really end. And it's like up to us to like kind of be in this like mental health movement that's been going on in the past few years in order to like break this. Because if we keep, you know, with this cycle, the next generation is just going to have the same problems that we have right now, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree that I feel like we mentioned, we see how our parents do things and we are like, nope, we're not doing that. That's not the way I want to raise my kid. Especially with the mental health thing, I feel like it does not matter what I've said. It does not matter what like my kid is feeling, if he or she, I guess, have anything bottled up. I do want to put them in therapy just to get them in tune with their emotions, because I never thought therapy was a bad thing, especially after moving to the US, right? Learning about all the good they can do to you, actually, just to get some information out, just to get different perspective even from someone, from like professional licensed help, that the next generation, even after us, could be even healthier. And like, I want my kids to have all the emotional support that they have. And I know how I am, and I might not be the best outlet for that. So
let's say my mom as well has a lot of trauma she has to work with, because like me, she didn't grow up with her parents. At a young age, she had to take care of her sisters like a mother would. And so the thing is, like, when I talk to her, she also has the same perspective of like, well, you know, I'm fine now. I don't have to like deal with any of this. I feel like right now, at this point, I feel like I cannot even have kids, because I fear that I would give them some sort of trauma. Apart from just like the body changes, you know, that comes with being pregnant, that scares the shit out of me. But like raising a human being, and not just because they're cute. You know, oh yes, a baby is cute, like having a puppy, but that person has growth and has their own opinion and will make their own life. Like, you really have to really think about it, not just, oh, I have baby fever, I'll have a kid. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, and like, the thing is, the point of also you being a parent have some responsibility in how that person, another human, turns out, that you don't know if that other thing is not turned out to be good or pure evil. It could not be your fault, but that could just be the way that things works.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned it in another episode.
Right.
That, what if my kid turns out to be a psychopath? Is that something that you can deal with? Or, you know, it's so scary. I don't want kids.
You know what? Honestly, I've thought about this too. I don't think I ever had baby fever. I never thought they were cute. Does not matter what stage they are. Besides, our roommate's nephews, they're really cute. But also the things that we see them through pictures and like videos, like, oh, that's a cute kid. But you know, I don't like kids that much at this stage of my life either to think, oh, I really should have a kid soon. Not once has that crossed my mind.
Yeah, and to be honest, because I've, like how I mentioned, I was in a lot of houses. I was always almost the oldest ones of them. So I always had to be like the caretaker. And when I started living with my mom at the age of 13, she already had a kid that was 3 years old. And then when I was 20, she had twins. So I had to take care of them as well. And so I am exhausted of little kids. I have exhausted that. That was like the best anti-conception experience I've ever had.
He's like, I'm done with kids. They're out. I've taken care of enough kids in my lifetime for four people.
To be honest. And like, I'm content with my little pup. That it's like, he's needy, but I could like, you know, leave him with like with my mother-in-law or like Diego, and they won't like cry about it, or they won't go to school and they won't go to college, and I don't have to worry about their mental health. I just have to make sure that they're well fed and I give them love, and you know, they won't be like, I hate you, mom. You did this to me. You know, they're not gonna do that.
I totally get it. Oh, it's for me also, it's the thing, like I mentioned before, I grew up with a single mom as well, and which is a little different than yours, but I hated to see how my mom struggled to keep us like above the poverty line, pretty much, if we didn't have help from our like my grandma or my aunts, because that's where I would have to stay when she went to work and stuff. And so for me, unless I can 100% be sure that, first of all, like my partner, whoever it ends up being, will, I can see him staying, and I don't see me leaving, which is very hard for me to do because I feel like I also have attachment issues. I don't attach easily as well. And especially, like our personality test said, I also hide behind the mask. So honestly, if, let's say, someone leaves, or if I break up with someone, I might be sad, but it's going to be very hard for me to show that to people. I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah, that's all it is.
The days are the days.
Yeah, and so for me, it's very hard for me to be 100% sure of those things. And I don't really like kids anyways. So we're not helping society. Oh no, Charlie. Isn't there a study saying like population is decreasing because people are having less kids now?
Good.
Like the the more educated you are, the less kids they'll have or something. Yeah. And not helping society.
To be honest,
but it's okay.
To be honest, like back then, the only reason you had kids was to help you in your farm and help you work mm-hmm. because you are dirt poor. You weren't part of like the aristocracy or like the one percenters. I feel like we're not dealing with that as much anymore. Mm-hmm. So people really think about why they want to have kids. It's not about helping you. And like I hate when they say, oh, you need to have a kid because who'll take care of you when you're old? Like, I hate that because your kid shouldn't be your like end of life
safety blanket.
Safety yeah. blanket. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That I prefer just to like hire a like hot nurse and like have him like take care of me for the rest of my days.
Hot nurse.
That's what my mother-in-law always says. She says, look, when I'm older and I cannot do anything, just like hire 3 hot nurses. One that's a doctor, no, one that's a cook, then a nurse, and then like a chiropractor, and I'll be fine.
That's a great way. So, life goal, focus on making enough money for retirement that we can hire 3 hot nurses each. We can have one from different regions. You know, we can have Asian ones, we can have Hispanic ones, American ones. Oh! That's the life. That's exactly. The senior life I want to live.
That's it. Because like, damn, when they say, oh, you know, that's like my stepdad's parents, like that's how they were with one of my sisters. They were like, oh, but you'll have to take care of us. If you're not here, who's going to take care of us? That's really selfish thing to say. So I hope that whoever listens to this, if someone has said that to you, or if you're thinking that, like, just really think about what you're putting on that person. Like, those people are not servants that will serve you when you grow older, right? So be mindful.
Yeah, I feel like I do feel that pressure too, because in Asian society, you have to take care of the elders. You have to take care of parents. I completely get it, and I think I still will, just because of how much my mom did for me when I was a kid. I know it's a little different for you, but the thing is a lot of pressure on me as a single child. You see, like in American families, American cultures, when they take care of their parents, they have 2 or 3 siblings or at least one other sibling that can help them. Yeah, our parents are old, we'll take care of them together. I can contribute money or I can contribute time. But for me, I have to do both. And that's just, I feel like it's a really relatable thing for a lot of Chinese kids, my generation, to be thinking about. And it's very tough taking care of 4 parents between a couple, right? Just you and your husband taking care of both of your parents are really, really tough, I think.
I get it. And I'm not saying like, though, this is a bad thing, but it is tough. It is tough. I, on the other hand, have siblings who can definitely help. But yeah, that's just something to keep in mind, right?
Yeah, but I feel like for you, you're also the eldest. So they're like, well, why isn't she helping?
Yeah, probably. But
yeah, I can see that happening. So like, that's just something that's gonna be on you that I won't have to experience. But
yeah,
oh
yeah, it's anyways, it's so anyway. So hard.
It's so hard.
But yeah, I am interested in hearing what you guys have to say about like your personality types, or maybe a story from your childhood that you'd be like, damn, I'm messed up. Like, we'll want to hear it.
Yeah, or like even something that we said that draw up another memory from you guys. So I go, oh, something similar happened to me as well. And we can all relate together and be a community together.
Be a traumatic community.
And trauma brings people closer.
Oh, that's right.
That's true.
And talking about bringing people closer, we recently got a message on our Instagram.
I'm so excited.
A gentleman from Brazil.
You know who you are.
DM'd us on Instagram and kind of heard us. He heard our second episode, which was the love status one with where Sky kind of like shared with us her her experience with online dating. And well, our friend from Brazil, he shared a little his experience, and like we asked for permission and he said, yeah, go for it. So we're gonna read what he said.
He's excited.
Let's see, let me pull it up.
I know we've talked and I already said this, but I want to thank you again for listening. It really makes me so excited and like makes me want to keep going on more episodes and think of more ideas and just do more with our podcast.
Yes. I also feel the same. I actually never thought that somebody was going to like, you know, message us.
Yeah, like reach out to us. Right? I thought only our friend group listened to our podcast, but there's someone else too. I'm so excited.
All right. I'm not going to say his name because we don't say our real name, so we're not going to do that to you guys either. But I'm just going to call him Lou, okay? So, he says, hey, Sky and Charlie, my name is Lou and I'm from Brazil. I want to thank you guys for randomly following me here on Insta and make me go look your amazing work on Spotify. Yes, we are. If you guys follow us, we will follow back, so. Anyways.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I just listened to one of your episodes, the one about online dating, and it was great. I feel like I should grab a cup of tea and relax after a hard work day chatting with my two old friends.
Aww.
I know that's a little bit random and maybe out of time, but I would like to share my experience on online dating. As a 25-year-old gay guy, I've been through a lot of dating. Since I came out and accepted myself, I realized that I would like to know more about my sexuality and the stuff I like to do in those terms. So I quick got on Grindr and Tinder, and I started looking for some guys. In the beginning, it was really fun and had a taste of always discovering something new through adventure and youthness. But after all those meetings with random guys made me feel that all that was more and more meaningless and empty. Also, that made me feel like I wasn't taking care of myself or my feelings because I was just going with the flow without thinking about what I really wanted. When it comes to gay dating terms, we need to understand that we are dealing with men. I got guys making fun of me about my non-standard body, about the nerdy things I like, or even people that seem to care and show some interest in having a relationship, but after a couple of weeks, ghosted me. Even though I don't get offended because I understand that people who don't respect me do not deserve my attention, I get really frustrated and sad. All this body-based hookup culture does not allow us to meet people who really want to meet us and know about us. That new Netflix series, Heartstopper, even if it's cliche as hell, made me think that there is no respect and sense of responsibility in online dating. These apps are transforming the concepts of dating and relationships in fast foods where you get what you want when you want it. And well, that got a little bit long, but all what I wanted to say is that I'm getting really sick of online dating, and there is a sort of fear that it's getting really hard to make some offline dating nowadays, where something can bloom from a process. Everything is getting easier and quirkier, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. And I get so excited rereading, like hearing this story again, I guess, because it's from a listener. But yeah, I totally agree. You know, I've been through the same thing. online dating sucks, men sucks. But I feel like really just you don't have to put yourself out there for the intention of finding someone. Just put yourself out there if for the intention of finding a new hobby, let's say, or pursuing more deeply into a hobby you already have. And that probably will help, like, you make friends, and from friends, you know more friends, and from more friends, you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And we wish you the best. And I know you mentioned that you're, like, really working on yourself and your own independence, mm-hmm. So we're so happy for you.
Yeah.
And I hope that you keep listening to us, you know.
Yeah.
We'll always be there. We do respond on Instagram, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're happy to talk to you guys, hear what you guys have to say. Our social medias will be in the description, as well as the tests we took. So you guys can also take this test and kind of share with us what your results were. We're always here because we're also really nosy bitches. So we want to know what's going on.
What's going on with everyone's business?
In a good way. In a good way.
In a good way. Yeah. But, not to judge or anything. We just want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. We just want to know. We won't judge our followers. We'll just judge random people on the internet. But anyway.
There we go. Anyways.
I hope you guys liked this episode where we talked about types of personalities and how that deals with like traumatic events in your life and see how other people deal with that trauma and how they also use it for more negative things or positive things. But always look for therapy. It's always great to better yourself. All right, you've listened to the Homebodies podcast. I hope to see you guys next time. And reach out to us. We're always here. Our Instagram is the Homebodies podcast, as well as our email. We would love to hear from you guys, and well, we will see you in the next episode.
The next episode.